On Thursdays around here, we do something called the Multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. This is where we take a look back through one of sports' great what-ifs.
Exploring sports' biggest what-ifs and could-have-beens. Let's dive into the Multiverse of Maggie and Perloff.
Hi, Perloff. It's draft season, NFL draft season.
Love it. Best time of year.
So we're going back through some of the great what-ifs with the draft. Last week we did, what if Peyton Manning had not been taken number one overall by the Indianapolis Colts, and it was actually Ryan Leaf, and Peyton went to San Diego, and we walked through those sliding doors. Today we bring you another one. This was a big rumor that was around in 2018, and that was the Patriots being connected to Lamar Jackson. Now, ironically, the Patriots ended up trading with the Ravens so that the Ravens could come at 32 and get Lamar Jackson. However, there was a lot of smoke that Bill Belichick loved Lamar. They got on very well, multiple meetings and visits. So today's question in the multiverse, so what if or what could have been, what if the Patriots had selected Lamar Jackson in the 2018 NFL draft?
I'll tell you, go first, sir. I'll tell you one thing. This big Bill Belichick expose on ESPN, we would not have that.
No, we wouldn't.
Because he would be the New England Patriots coach, but it way more than this. So Lamar reportedly, Bill Belichick's actually been honest and talked about it. He said he loved, Lamar came to Gillette. They got along great. Bill Belichick has always wanted a mobile quarterback just to see what he could do with it as a moving piece. Love Lamar. They took instead, with the 23rd pick, they took Isaiah Wynn, oft-injured left tackle, and running back Sony Michel at 31. Oh, Bill, you didn't get the memo. Don't draft running backs in the first round. Michel was fine, but they did not need him at all. I think that's when their draft started going off the rails, especially offensively. The following year, they took N'Keal Harry. If they had had Lamar Jackson, he'd sit for a year, then Tom would be gone, and Lamar would lift all boats in New England, and they would still have that great defense, and they would kind of be like Baltimore. They would be a really, really good team. Here's the one twist I have that you'll like. It was August of 2019 when the Dolphins started tampering with Tom Brady. If you had Lamar Jackson and you watched him in practice for a year, probably sit on the bench behind Brady, I think that the Patriots, Brady, and everybody would have been more willing to move on quicker. They would not have kept Brady for that last year in New England. He would have been a Miami Dolphin. And man, the Dolphins are talking Super Bowl too. We might even have a Miami Baltimore AFC title game between Tom Brady and Lamar Jackson, because the timing didn't quite work out for the Dolphins and Brady, but I think if they'd moved on a year earlier, that would have been the spot.
Okay, interesting. This is the Multiverse of Maggie and Perloff, a sports what if or what could have been. We're going back through the 2018 draft where the Patriots were enamored with Lamar Jackson, didn't end up taking him. So we're asking, what if the Patriots had taken Lamar in that draft? So here's a real life question about that, though.
Yeah, I understand. I know what the question is.
They won the Super Bowl that year. The Patriots win the Super Bowl the same year of the Lamar Jackson draft, right? The 2018 season. You're really moving on from Brady the year after you win the Super Bowl? He was always going to be on the Patriots in 2019, and then he left in 2020 anyway, and that's the year he won with the Bucs. So
in real life,
you're not actually moving on from Brady after he wins at the sixth Super Bowl?
He won 13-3. They were talking.
Oh, my gosh. Now they were talking about the score?
He was talking on the yacht in that offseason.
Right, but then you win the Super Bowl. It's like Aaron Rodgers might have thought about it.
No, after the Super Bowl.
After the Super Bowl. Okay, but they're talking about.
So they had already known, like, the end was nigh. Brady had started his exit process right after that Super Bowl.
Okay, but he was never going to. There was no chance he wasn't going to be the quarterback of the Patriots the year after they won their sixth Super Bowl. That in real life, that's not going to happen.
But like, he's already talking to other teams that offseason.
For the future.
So you're saying he had to take that one year, but he was not into that year. He didn't want to be there. He didn't want that team. He knew the team was terrible.
Okay, but he's still going to play for the Patriots that year.
I think they could have moved on. Kind of like Trent Dilfer in Baltimore.
Okay, well, a little different. But I think you're talking about like Aaron Rodgers, right? He might have wanted to leave Green Bay, but then he won back-to-back MVPs, and that's going to keep you, or not back-to-back, he won two more MVPs. And that's going to keep you around just a little bit longer, because there's a real-life component of this. If Brady wins the Super Bowl in 2018, I don't think he's leaving the next year, even if Lamar Jackson is sitting behind him.
As I understand it, the marriage had fallen apart based on the documentary. Even after that, they were already at each other's throats by that 18 Super Bowl, Brady and Belichick. Kind of. I mean, they beat the Rams 13-3.
I know.
That
I
is
love
a
how you
soft
go back
Super
over
Bowl.
This
that is a soft Super Bowl.
Well,
no,
I know the Saints fans will agree with you on that one, but again, they did win. It was a low-scoring game, but I don't know what that has to do with it.
But I remember in the doc, the Patriot way, like things were really crumbling between Belichick and Brady by that point.
Right,
so,
which is amazing. They were able to keep winning despite bad marriage.
But the 19-year was bad from the start. They knew it wasn't going to work. Brady did not want... It felt like Brady was miserable. His receivers were terrible. Everybody was either old or hurt. So, okay. Yeah, but they definitely... Well, here's the other thing, too. They wanted to draft a quarterback. They were looking at a quarterback that year. So they were very interested in Lamar Jackson. They were looking for Brady's replacement.
Yeah, ultimately.
But what did they do?
So yes.
Yeah, but I mean, like, listen, they were pretty serious. I'll bet you if they could do it again, he 100% would have drafted Lamar.
Of course, now everyone should, if they could do it again, have drafted Lamar. But so we're doing the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. It's a what if or what could have been of sports. We're talking about what if the Patriots had drafted Lamar Jackson in 2018.
So, yeah, but my point is, like, they wanted to move on. If they had drafted him in 2018 before they won that 2018 Super Bowl, they would have been pressured to move him up to the starting lineup, regardless of the Super Bowl win.
Yeah, listen, if they had actually drafted Lamar in 2018, the succession plan is much easier, obviously, right? Because I think Brady still sticks around for the year after they win the Super Bowl 2019, just because that's a real life thing. I don't think you're moving on. And then 2020, he goes to Tampa or Miami or wherever Brady would have eventually gone.
Well, Tampa.
In Tampa, and he wins the Super Bowl there, and Lamar would have stepped in. Here's where I'm not sure it would have been so seamless. You know, Belichick in his, how he's run the offense and the stubbornness about the offense was really one of the things that ushered in Belichick being gone out of New England, wouldn't you say?
I mean, defense. How so?
Because the defense has always been good. He's always had a handle on the defense. That's never really been the problem. It's how he mishandled the drafting of offensive players and how they ran the offense. Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, you know, how Mac Jones never developed. Like, the offense couldn't draft a wide receiver to save his life. The offense is what's taken the ire, really, for Belichick.
But Belichick wants to run, and that's what Baltimore did with Lamar.
Right, but this is what's cut into his legacy probably more than anything, right? Is how bad the Patriots' offense really fell apart, not the defense. I'm not 100% sure, even if Belichick wants to run, that he would have been able to have the right coaching around Lamar Jackson and would have fully tailored the offense around Lamar the way that you need to get the most out of Lamar Jackson. Like, I don't know if Lamar's winning MVPs as the quarterback of the New England Patriots.
I think the Patriots and the Ravens are exactly the same. What difference would it be? The Ravens never had a top 20 passing offense with Lamar. So the Patriots would have loved that.
No, but they finally had to, you know, the Ravens finally had to put a lot more resources and a lot more, like, the Ravens had trouble drafting the right receivers to pair with Lamar Jackson before Zay Flowers. They've had a lot of busts, like Perriman, guys like that. I don't think that Bill would have been able to nearly put even any good receivers around Lamar Jackson. And on top of that, let's not forget, the Ravens brought in Greg Roman was the first offensive coordinator. He's a guy who worked with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
He worked with Josh Allen. He's worked with running QBs. I don't know if Belichick was ever going to bring in somebody who specifically could have gotten the most out of running quarterbacks. Josh McDaniels, Bill O'Brien, I don't know if they were doing that.
Well, McDaniels had a good year with Tebow. But I think that Belichick always, he talked about it. He wanted a mobile quarterback. I think he could do whatever Greg Roman could do. He's Bill Belichick.
Could he? I mean, his offense was awful the last couple of years. It's not a snap your fingers. Belichick can run a good offense. Again, we're talking about the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff.
Lamar drops back, the rush over pursues, and he takes off for 20 yards. What coaching?
Okay, then why haven't the Ravens won 4 Super Bowls in a row?
Well, they go 15-1 and he won an MVP in his second year? I mean, I think that Belichick could definitely do that.
Yeah, but see, I'm not so sure.
What did the Ravens do by design? Like, Greg Roman has got no ingenuity to me. I don't think, like, Greg Roman is credit for this. It wasn't, like, by design that they couldn't pass the ball. They basically, like, they were a strong defense, strong running game.
I know, but also there was the lack of personnel where you saw even this year with Zay Flowers. You saw how that much they opened up the offense because they finally had people to actually catch the ball.
Right, but they've been
Belichick has nobody. He and the wide receivers have been terrible for him.
The Ravens wide receivers have been awful until this year.
I know, and they haven't won jack squats.
Yes, they totally have won jack squats. They've been an amazing team. Were they 14-2 or 15?
Lamar's got a 2-4 playoff record. They've won jack.
But, I mean, they've been I think they've won like 90% more games than the Patriots. They definitely won a lot. Lamar was an MVP. That team was great.
Okay,
I know they haven't won in the playoffs, but regardless.
Okay, well, what are we judging this off of?
Well,
is why Lamar gets criticized.
But, I mean, if Belichick could have gotten them to 14-2, that's a huge accomplishment for a team that, what did they go, 12-4 in Brady's last year, and then it was 8-8. Like, don't you think that things would feel a lot sunnier if the Patriots had Lamar winning 13, 14 games?
I just am not sure that you're getting that 13, 14 win season, because I don't think Belichick gets the benefit of the doubt that he was going to put the right pieces around Lamar and have the right game plan around Lamar to maximize it. The Ravens, you could argue, have they? Like, are you in this to get your quarterback MVPs, or are you in this to win Super Bowls?
Well, I'm just sorry. I mean, if the Ravens could get Lamar an MVP, I think Bill Belichick's a good enough coach that he could. I think he would have had, obviously, Greg Roman. I don't even know if Roman is a Belichick guy, but it feels like he's part of that whole coaching circle. You're telling me that Belichick couldn't have had as much offensive success as the Ravens. The Ravens didn't do anything right on offense. They never put any good players around Lamar until this year, and they still won a million games when he's on the field.
Again, what are they doing in the playoffs? I mean,
yeah, maybe there wouldn't be playoff success, but then again, they do have Bill Belichick, who is pretty good in the playoffs, so maybe they do a little better than the Ravens.
855-212-4227. Again, Multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. Today, the question is, it's a sports what if or what could have been. We're asking, how would things have been different if Bill Belichick and the Patriots had drafted Lamar Jackson in 2018? This was a rumor that was out there at the time that Belichick and Lamar had a good relationship and liked each other. Now, granted, the Patriots did trade with the Ravens for that pick. So they gave the Ravens Lamar, essentially. However, sort of reimagining what life could be like with the Patriots. I'll agree with you on this one. Belichick would have already had the record for most wins with Don Shula.
Definitely
passed that.
Well, 15 is a lot in that time, but yes, probably, yeah.
I mean, he's still employed by the Patriots, I'll give you that. I still think Brady would have won a Super Bowl somewhere else.
Yep.
But I don't think that Belichick would be as, you know, the stock would be, obviously could not have been this low, because he would have taken a risk on a totally different style of quarterback. I think people would have given him a lot of credit for that. I just don't know if it actually would have worked. Because Belichick has not been good putting other wide receivers, has not been good picking wide receivers. Let's call it what it is. Let's be blunt about it. I mean, his offense is the reason why his stock is so low right now. Part of the reason is his demeanor, wanting full control of a building, and the offense just totally cratered. I mean, they had Mac Jones, who made a Pro Bowl his first year and then completely fell off. So,
well, I mean, listen. This is a one quarterback who does not need good receivers to thrive, because he had terrible results. I'm looking at who he had his first MVP year. It was Hollywood Brown. He threw mostly to his tight ends of Mark Andrews, Hayden Hurst, and Nick Boyle. Who's that remind you of? Belichick. Then he had Seth Roberts, Miles Boykin. I mean, this was the Ravens had no receivers either and won a ton of games. So I think the match would have been great. I think that's why Belichick probably thought, like John Harbaugh, man, I can win a lot of games with Lamar Jackson. And I think Belichick really probably, people in that building probably wanted him to take Lamar in 2018. I mean, geez, Belichick probably wanted to start Jimmy G at that point.
Well, and Jimmy G was gone at that point.
Yeah,
already traded him away.
Right, they drafted Jimmy G in the second round. I'm sure that there were people in that Patriots building who really wanted Lamar and move on from Tom.
855-212-4227. How the world would have been different if Lamar Jackson had been drafted by the Patriots in 2018. That's the multiverse question for today. Coming up, we're going to check in on the NFL draft. Dane Brugler, who authors something called The Beast, the most comprehensive draft breakdown I think I've ever seen, Perloff. I mean, you and I worked at Sports Illustrated for a long time. They did a lot of good draft stuff there. This is unlike anything.
Yeah, I mean, Kuiper's Guide is famous, too. It's kind of like an evolution of that. I think inside the buildings, they probably have even more. Right, but this is as close as you're going to get to what an actual team might know about players.
We will get to that in just a moment. 855-212-4227. It's Maggie and Perloff. Don't move.
Back on Maggie and Perloff. Today's multiverse, every Thursday we do a multiverse. What if the Patriots had drafted Lamar Jackson either the 23rd pick or the 31st pick in the 2018 draft? They talked to him. They had been sort of sniffing around quarterbacks for a long time. Maybe I believe that they would have a succession plan. Bill Belichick would still be in New England, winning a lot of games. I don't know if he wins the Super Bowl, but I actually think he has a better chance than Lamar did in Baltimore because he is Bill Belichick. Maggie says, you're not quite sure Belichick had it all together offensively.
No, the offense is really where you can start to pick apart Bill Belichick and how the offense went downhill after Tom Brady left and even that last year with Brady in 2019. So I'm not so sure that he all of a sudden is going to be able to, you know, maximize Lamar. So that's our multiverse for today, as Perloff said, our what if and what could have been. Adrian's in Maryland has a thought on this. Good morning, Adrian.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, guys. Maggie, I agree with you, Parcel, and Perloff, I think you're wrong. Lamar Jackson is not a plug-and-play person. Belichick, his scheme is around the team, around the offense. Even Brady, when he first came in, it was around the offense. The quarterback does what he does, but he doesn't lose the game for him. Lamar, his weakest point is throwing the ball. And I think Belichick, where he lost it all is Josh McDaniels. Nobody talks about that. When Matt Jones came in, he was fine with McDaniels.
Yeah.
But McDaniels left for the Raiders, and there the offense goes. That's when the offense left them. And I got one more thing before I leave. If the Dolphins, the Jets, or the Bills slip up this year and they got to fire their head coach, don't be surprised if Belichick goes there just to stick it.
Absolutely.
100%. 100%, Adrian. And even the bad blood. Now, I don't know if I can see Belichick with the Jets. The Jets, that guy hates the Jets. As much as he might want to stick to Kraft, I don't know if he could even hold his nose and go to the Jets because of the bad falling out that they had.
I totally agree with that. Was Woody the owner when that all happened?
No,
or was
that
Leon
was
Hess?
Part of it. That was okay. Part of it. That was the succession plan. He thought that James Dolan was going to buy the team, and it spooked him. So.
Well, I think Lamar would have been good.
Bill's not stupid.
I think Bill would have loved Lamar. Lamar never throws interceptions. I mean, he did actually throw a bad one in the playoffs, but he's really good at playing a clean game. That would have been a great fit. Obviously, I mean, that's not a hot take. That Lamar Jackson would have been a good quarterback with New England.
Andrew Bogish has headlines. Good morning.
I'll turn my mic on. That's usually helpful. So Perloff lost his dignity in a bowl of Skyline chili. Jason Kelce lost his Super Bowl ring in one.
What?
The Kelce brothers did a live version of their podcast recently in Cincinnati. The show included college students looking for socks filled with faux championship memorabilia and one with the actual Super Bowl ring. All of this was in two large vats of chili, spaghetti, and cheese.
They could not find it. This is Jets Jake and intern Brandon the next day searching through the chili to try and find the sock that had my Super Bowl ring in it. We have still yet to find it. All of this stuff has been thrown away, so I think we can safely assume that my Super Bowl ring is now in a landfill. Someplace in the Cincinnati tri-state area.
Apparently, Jason has been good at misplacing this ring after he won it a couple of years ago, but it's always been found. This time, though, as he said, it's probably gone for good. They have put in an insurance claim, but he's not sure it'll get paid out since this was all completely avoidable.
Good. I hope it's sitting in a landfill.
Yeah. Wait. Totally. So this thing is, what are they doing? They're doing some kind of live show?
I think that's why there are pictures of them and Joe Burrow at a college bar last week. Travis got his diploma recently from Cincinnati, so they were all there for that.
I feel like the Kelces can't fart without me knowing about it, so the fact that this never got to my timeline, I find it very odd.
You didn't see him chugging a beer on stage in his cap and gown? Travis?
I saw way too much of it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that was a live show. I thought that was some kind of graduation.
Right. I think that this all happened last week while they were in Cincinnati the graduation. Burrow was hanging out with them. They did the thing. That's where Burrow made a comment about winning the next Super Bowl. He said Josh Allen's going to be the next guy to win his first Super Bowl. All this happened last week in Cincinnati.
I thought Brady said that. Joe Burrow said that?
And no. I think he responded to Brady talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Because there was a clip we were looking for because they haven't released the audio. We're way in the weeds here.
Okay, sorry.
It was
and
a
that's
busy
my fault.
Week in Cincinnati for them. All these things happened there.
And he lost his Super Bowl ring in two vats of chili. And also, who are the people who are searching for the ring and didn't get it? I mean, you got to go all out if you're selected to participate in one of these kind of stunts.
I don't think insurance should cover this.
No,
they shouldn't.
This is ridiculous.
Well, these losers love themselves, so I wouldn't put it past them.
So glad Pete's back.
I wouldn't put it past them to plant a fake ring there to get the attention on themselves. Oh, hey, look, I lost my ring. Oh, where is it now? Where did it go?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, sitting in a case at home.
Yeah, I think he'd pay $125,000 to get this story out there.
He would.
Yeah, I think Kelsey would. And by the way, Travis Kelce pulled out of Barstool's Beer Olympics. It was like a huge headline all over the place. Like they're in the muck. They are drinking beer. They are doing chili things. Everything is going on.
Pete, you might have a future in like political ops. That was pretty good.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
They might need you for this election, either side.
I feel like he nailed that.
You got to give me a big check for this election.
Pete, I would take any check based on your complaints about here. It sounds like any check would be good.
That's true.
Yeah.
Money, sign me up.
I wouldn't have a high price tag.
Pete Bilotti, we already said earlier this morning he looks like he could be a cult leader. Could he also be some kind of like Democratic operative, Republican operative?
Republican.
Either way.
Thank you.
I think maybe leaning more towards the right. Okay, whatever it is, that's fine. They probably pay better.
Yeah, well.
I can see you just in the background, like just pulling
less
strings.
Less taxes and all.
Little evil. I like it.
Roger Stone.
No Super Bowl rings will be lost under people.
I will say this.
Or one.
For any party, I think I'd be a very valuable asset.
All of a sudden, Pete's wearing a fedora. He's got like a little mustache. However shady people look.
Because they trench coat, the collar is up.
Passing envelopes to people.
I'd be a good vetter for any party.
Wow. What do you have on us, Pete?
You're right.
I have stuff.
Your cynicism, like you thinking that Jason Kelce is doing this for publicity, that's a good place to start in that job.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious. Who unless he's really stupid, which is possible, to put your Super Bowl ring in a vat of chili. I mean, that's insulting to winning the ring, first of all.
Yeah. Well, Pete, it wasn't a sock.
It's
supposed to be safe.
I have to take that
big
back.
Big detail there, executive producer.
He actually, I'll take that back. It was actually a very smart move to put it in a sock. The very expensive Super Bowl ring in a sock.
I don't know. Maybe I've just like seen one too many like teen comedies, but I feel like other things going in socks are not that.
So gross.
I'm sorry.
Back to sports. The Bulls hosted the Hawks last night to finish the first round of the play-in tourney. The Bulls running away with a 131-116 win with Kobe White dropping a career-high 42. Chicago moves on to Miami while Trae Young and Atlanta go home.
Just didn't come out and make enough plays, and I mean, that's just part of it. They're making a lot of plays. Kobe got going. I mean, Vucevic was playing really well. Everybody really played really well. So, you got to tip their hats to them. But yeah, it's tough.
So the Bulls win, and they advance to take on the Heat in Miami tomorrow night to decide the 8 seed. The Heat go home after losing in Philadelphia 105-104. Plus, they lost Jimmy Butler maybe to a right knee injury. He finished the game last night. Gets an MRI today with his MCL, the apparent concern. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thank you so much. We turn our attention to the upcoming NFL draft, and for that, we go to the Athletic's NFL draft expert, Dane Brugler. He's got this thing, Perloff. I know you're a big fan of it. So am I. It's called The Beast. It is the most comprehensive draft scouting report I've ever seen in my entire life, and Dane joins us now. Dane, thanks so much for, first of all the hard work. Everything we learn from The Beast is amazing, so thanks for the time.
No, thank you. Good morning, guys.
Okay, first let's start here so people have a little understanding of what we're talking about. The amount of small tidbits, along with the big stuff, like the big scouting stuff, we're going to talk about all these quarterbacks, but can you just start us off with what's the most interesting or fun tidbit you felt like you unearthed about one of these prospects?
There's so many, and that's my favorite thing of the draft process is learning the journey that all these guys go through. No two journeys are the same. When they started playing football, what was their upbringing like? What other sports did they play? All these little details, I think, you know, if you want to know where a player is going, you need to know where he came from, and just it helps to fill in all the gaps. So, you know, there's so many in here. Caleb Williams, you know, his nickname was Bobby Boucher after Adam Sandler's Waterboy character, because he was a linebacker growing up before he's made that switch over to quarterback. And so when you watch him run the football, you can see that running back, linebacker background, that mentality that he has. So that's always interesting. And there's so many just inspiring stories. You know, Ray Davis at Kentucky, the hand that he was dealt and to overcome as much as he did, becoming the first player in college football history, we think. It's a hard stat to look up, but he led three different FBS teams in rushing over his career. Quantez Stiggers from the CFL, Toronto Argonauts, he's going to be drafted as a non-combine guy. He had so many doors closed in his face, but for him to overcome what he did. So a lot of fun stories in here, a lot of fun tidbits that I think people really enjoy.
So Caleb Williams had to answer a question. Actually, it was on social media where someone came out and criticized him, said he didn't go through adversity, and he listed some adversity he had. You dive into that. I think you talked about stories. Everyone, all the great quarterbacks have a backstory of adversity. Do you think Caleb Williams really has that, or is he sort of just coasted on being the best player around?
No, I think it's silly because I think he has overcome. Now, maybe not compared to some others. You know, there's different, varying degrees of adversity that people have to go through. But I think it's funny that a lot of people will criticize him for the crying in the stands, but then also criticize him for not going through adversity. Like, we can't have it both ways. You know, if he was this upset that he lost that game, that he's in tears, that tells me that, you know, he cares, you know, that he really wanted to win that game. And the fact that he couldn't pull it off at the end mattered that much to him, that he was that physically emotional, that's, you know, he's going through stuff that's overcoming, working past that. So, you know, this season did not go as planned for USC, going 7-5. You know, and you look at what the offense did, and okay, the offense put him in position to win. And you look at the defense, and over the 2 years at USC, the Trojans defense gave up at least 34 points in all eight losses that they had. The defense averaged giving up 43 points per game. So, you know, I think when you look at that USC team, it was obviously offensive heavy. And that's tough on a quarterback when you're scoring all these points and you're doing everything you can to win, but then you're going right back out there after 10 minutes because, you know, your defense is giving up points. So, you know, growing up, he didn't necessarily grow up with a tough situation, but, you know, you win and lose games. And, you know, that's a personal battle for a quarterback. So, has he overcome as much adversity as other quarterbacks? No, but I think he's overcome enough that I don't think what the NFL throws at him is going to be too much for him to handle.
All right, we're talking to Dane Brugler of The Athletic. Caleb Williams is the best quarterback prospect since?
Yeah, you know, it's always tough to do this because you have to eliminate what we've seen of these guys in the NFL, right? I think just based off prospect grade, the last, you know, 6-7 years, Joe Burrow is the best quarterback that I've personally evaluated. After that, I think it's probably Trevor Lawrence. And so I think Caleb is kind of right there on that Trevor Lawrence tier, maybe right below him, as being just the most physically gifted and a player that you're most optimistic about. Because when you draft a quarterback, you're essentially making a bet saying, okay, he has this, this, and this, and I'm going to bet that's going to translate, that's going to work out at the next level. And when with Caleb, he has this rare football awareness that really shows whether he's inside the pocket, outside the pocket, the way he can process everything and just make something happen. And so physically he's not the tallest guy, but he is well built. He's a very good athlete. He has an outstanding arm, both velocity and accuracy, but it's that rare football awareness that I think really stands out as separating him. And, you know, that's an instinct that I think will carry with him to the NFL. And as things get faster, as he has to process things quicker, that's something that I think will serve him well and why I think he's going to have success pretty early.
Dane Brugler is joining us. He's the Athletic's NFL draft expert. He pours himself into this thing called The Beast, where you can find as much about the, you know, fifth offensive lineman prospect as you can about Caleb Williams. It's really comprehensive. Let's keep it on quarterbacks though, Dane, and JJ McCarthy is the guy who's really been, at least on the outside, appears to have done very well in this draft process. Thought it was interesting that you wrote, it feels like his evaluation is incomplete because of how little he was really asked to carry for the Michigan offense. Have you ever had an evaluation like that? And, you know, if so, how did that turn out? Or what do you think teams should take from that?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you look back at Trey Lance coming out of North Dakota State. He had so few pass attempts, and it was all at the FCS level, and obviously that hasn't worked out. But then you go back to last year with Anthony Richardson, who had under 400 pass attempts in his college career, and the early returns with Anthony Richardson are very positive. You know, we're especially Indianapolis fans, they're excited for what their quarterback situation looks moving forward. So with JJ McCarthy, it's funny because in the summer, if you go back to my top 50 back in August, my first one of the process, he was in the top 20. So I, based off of what I saw in the summer, I was very excited about what JJ McCarthy could be. And then at some point later in the year, I kind of got passed up by people being maybe a little more optimistic than I was. My evaluation has kind of stayed the same. I see the tools, the intangibles are off the charts. Teams rave about him as a person, the way he carries himself, the type of teammate that he is, the way that he processes information. So I think there's a lot of things that point to him being a good quarterback, but you just wish you saw it more. There's more of a body of work on film, and it was a product of the offense. You know, they built that team to, you know, they're going to rely on the run game. They're going to rely on the trenches. And who are we to argue? They won a national title doing it that way. But when they needed a play, especially on third down, fourth down, you go back to the Rose Bowl against Alabama, that final drive, when they needed a play, JJ McCarthy stepped up and he made it. He was very good on those money downs. And so the tools, the athletic traits, the passing traits that he has, and then also the person that he is, the intangibles, that's the type of thing that teams are going to latch onto and say, okay, we have to make a bet on this player. We feel comfortable doing that. And it'll be really interesting. Is he going to be the fourth quarterback drafted, or can he sneak into, you know, and convince the Commanders at two? Can he convince the Patriots at three?
Wow.
Or is he going to be that fourth quarterback? Like, I think is the most likely scenario. And who's it going to be? Is it going to be the Vikings trading up? I don't think the Giants are going to trade up. I would be surprised by that. But the Vikings feel like the most likely team to do that. We know they want to draft a quarterback. Just really comes down to their evaluation of JJ McCarthy.
Dane, so you put out a mock draft this week, and you had Jaden Daniels going number two to the Washington Commanders. But you had a note that made me a little nervous, because everyone's assuming now, and the Vegas odds are that Jaden will go number two. But you point out the Commanders are really not letting it out there. There's doesn't seem like that it's as done as we think it is. It still is kind of, you painted a picture, it's more up for grabs who they're going to take at number two.
Well, that's only because all the buzz that we're hearing about Jaden Daniels at two, that's coming from other teams. That's coming based off of what other teams think the Commanders are going to do. That's not coming from the camp there in Washington. So, you know, we have a brand new regime, right? A new owner who is hands-on. He will have a say in who that pick is going to be. First-year general manager. We have a new head coach, his second go-around as a head coach, but he's a defensive-minded head coach. So he's looking at this maybe through a different lens. You know, he's looking at it from, who would I least like to prepare against? You know, which of these quarterbacks do I not want to see on the other side? So when we have all these different voices, and of course there's other voices involved as well, all these different names, all these different voices and perspectives, it really is interesting. I think with Jaden Daniels, I get it. I mean, Drake May personally is my number two quarterback, but I understand it with Jaden Daniels. He accounted for 90 plays of 20 plus yards last year. So if you're looking for someone that's going to create those explosives, Jaden Daniels, it proves in the pudding. He did it last year at LSU. And to put that number in perspective, Joe Burrow in his magical Heisman's national title winning season a couple years ago, he had 87 plays of 20 plus yards, and he did it in 15 games. Jaden Daniels had 90 plays of 20 plus yards in 12 games. So it's really impressive what he put on film. Now, did he benefit from an offensive line that didn't really get him touched? Absolutely. Did he benefit from two first round wide receivers plus two more that'll be drafted next year? There's no doubt, but the calmness that he played with, the dual threat ability that he brings, and that's people or scouts around the league. They brought up Lamar Jackson when talking about Jaden Daniels, not as an apples to apples comp, but as a guy that you have to prepare for in a similar way, because he will beat you with his legs if you give him a lane. You know, wish he you know, take care of his body a little bit more with some of these runs. He doesn't need to prove how tough he is on every single run. But yeah, I think if you're looking for an injection of life in your offense, I could certainly understand why you'd come to the conclusion that Jaden Daniels could be that guy.
Dane Brugler joining us for just another minute from The Athletic. He's their draft expert. He's got this comprehensive guide called The Beast, and it really is, but it's also laid out, so it's very easy to follow and easy to read. You're not just going to get bombarded with info. They do a very good job, Perloff, and I know you know this, of really laying out what you need to know. Last one for me, and it's about quarterbacks again, and it's about Michael Penix and Bo Nix. Now, your latest mock, you have Penix sneaking into the end of the first round. You have Bo Nix going somewhere in the 50s. How much has Penix separated himself from Nix in this process? Is there a large gap between Penix and Nix?
Well, I think first thing, we have to throw out the word consensus. There's no such thing. All these teams look at these guys differently. And so for some teams, Penix is ahead of Nix. For other teams, Nix is ahead of Penix. And so it really depends on who you talk to. I do think Penix is probably going to be that fifth quarterback drafted, maybe in the late first round. I think if you're going to draft one of these guys in the first round, that's telling me that you think he's going to be a top 12 to 15 quarterback in the NFL. And that's where I have a hard time getting there. I can't quite get there based off of their film and based off of, you know, their traits as they go to the next level. But both these guys are going to start in the NFL. And a lot of quarterback desperate teams are out there. And if you're the Broncos, the Raiders, you can't get up there in the top five to get one of the top four quarterbacks this year. These are your options. You're looking at Spencer Rattler. You're looking at Michael Penix. You're looking at Bo Nix, guys that are talented yet flawed. And you're going to roll the dice and see if you might have something.
I like Penix. Maggie's a little more skeptical after the national title game. Real quick, Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers? Everyone has a different opinion. For me, watching college football this season, I thought it was a done deal with Marvin Harrison. Any chance that someone goes ahead of him as a wide receiver?
Yeah, there are teams that have Malik Nabers as wide receiver one in this draft. There's no doubt. And again, it goes back to that LSU offense. And if you want explosives, Malik Nabers had 34 catches of 20-plus yards, more than any other receiver in college football. Led the SEC in catches the last 2 years. So he's young, he's talented, and the production's there. Marvin Harrison, I give him the slight edge because he's so crafty, so savvy. He understands how to play the position. It's not just using his size and athleticism. So that craftiness will translate. I know it will. And so that will, I give him the edge. But both these guys are outstanding. If Malik Nabers were in last year's draft, he would have been my number one overall player. He is that good. So this is a draft where we have three potential number one receivers with Harrison, Nabers, and Adunze. Those guys are going to come off the board really quickly.
Dane, thank you so much for joining us and carving out some time. We know it's a really busy time. The Beast is a must read. I would suggest multiple sittings, though. You're not getting through that thing in just one lunch hour. Dane Brugler from The Athletic, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Appreciate that. It's amazing. He's like doing the work that like private investigators do. He's got a lot of cool info in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing. There's definitely, we watch the draft and we'll see a lot of the backstories, but there's a lot going on with these guys and the teams have a lot more in a way than just looking at game tape. That's why you go in and interview the strength coach. And I don't know how Dane gets this information, but it's awesome.
He's got the stuff. Coming up, we check in on the Dallas Cowboys. Don't move. It's Maggie Perloff.
Welcome. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Back to the Maggie and Perloff show. Sorry, just totally got sidetracked here. I've done this many times in my life.
You tell me these ridiculous stories right before we're about to go back on air. Let's do the Cowboys stuff and then let's talk about what you just told me.
Yeah, go ahead. So, what are those silly Cowboys up to now?
Music, of course. Here's Stephen Jones, who was on 105.3 The Fan the other day, talking about how the Cowboys, their salary cap's going to be maxed out. And they need to save money to re-sign their stars.
When we're all said and done, we max out our salary cap every year. And we will have done that. And, you know, hey, what comes with having a good roster, which we do, and, you know, we also, you know, are looking towards signing our own guys. It doesn't mean it happens overnight, but when you're wanting to sign players like Dak and Micah and CD, then, you know, that certainly you have to hold money back if you want to have a realistic chance at signing those guys.
Right, so that was Stephen Jones kind of defending why they haven't been able to go after high-priced free agents in this cycle, because they've got their own guys that they have to re-sign. And you think this makes sense?
Of course. I mean, is anyone saying, oh, the Cowboys are being cheap? Because that would be ridiculous. Obviously, the Cowboys are going to spend up to the cap. They just screwed up their cap situation. So Steve is not lying there. I think anyone who a Cowboy fan is wondering, like, man, why won't my team spend? That is obviously not the case.
No, it's not about being cheap, but you can criticize the Cowboys for mismanaging the situation. Now, they wouldn't be this strapped and they wouldn't have this little margin for error if they had gotten in front of some of these contracts. You get in front of the Dak Prescott contract, that lowers the cap number. You get in front of the CeeDee Lamb contract, that can lower the cap number. The more these quarterbacks and wide receivers and pass rushers, the more of them that sign, the price only goes up and up and up. These are three positions where the price goes up only. It never flattens out. This isn't running backs.
But no other team has figured this out. There's not another team that can have the most expensive quarterback, the most expensive wide receiver, and the most expensive pass rusher. I mean, listen, the Chiefs had to get rid of Tyreek Hill. Packers had to get rid of Devontae Adams, and you can't really pay Nick Bosa and a top-end quarterback.
Well, so, I mean, 49ers got pretty damn close, and they're going to have to pay Brock at some point.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, nobody could do this. I don't think the Cowboys are – it's impossible. I mean, look at the wide receiver quarterback combo. That is the story of the NFL right now. If you have an elite quarterback, you can't really have, like, a top-end wide receiver. These receivers have gotten so expensive. So is that really the Cowboys' fault? Is there a way to – I mean, I understand. You're right. They should have got out in front of Dak. But I don't think there's an easy solution here.
There's not an easy solution. I mean, I watched the Rams with a very expensive quarterback, a very expensive Aaron Donald, and a, you know.
They got their whole team, right?
Well, again, you pay the price at some point. But just because the Cowboys aren't necessarily cheap, and I wouldn't accuse them of that either, doesn't mean you can't be critical of how they approach the offseason. That is your Cowboy Quickie for today.
But what did they do this offseason that was wrong?
They should have signed Dak last year.
Right. How about this offseason?
Well, I would probably, I mean, you're going to see more wide receivers sign. I probably want to get the CeeDee Lamb deal done now. If you're not planning to move on from him, you know, don't wait until, you know, you have other guys who are going to go to the market here.
Yeah, I think they probably will get
something
done.
Don't wait until Justin Jefferson signs. You don't want that.
They probably will get something done with CD. I mean, it's only April. The problem is this Dak money is going to be a huge problem moving forward.
It is.
Because either they let him go and they have no quarterback and there's still a dead cap hit. It's a mess. It's a problem.
Right before, and we'll see if they end up drafting a quarterback in whatever round to try to fix and maybe move on from Dak Prescott.
And they got Trey Lance sitting there. Maybe that's your answer.
Yeah. Right before we go back on the air, Perloff tells me about some, was this a secret or not a secret? You played, we don't have to say the person, you played somebody who we used to work with one-on-one to 100
no.
to try to settle some sort of beef in the
office? I was exaggerating, but I remember we had this, that it was not 100. I've done games with that. Have you ever done an epic one-on-one? Maybe EJ's done this, where you have a beef with a friend about who's better, and then you're like, let's just play a huge game.
But this was someone you work with. This isn't even a friend.
Well, I've had a lot of shooting contests and games with people I work with. That's nothing
This abnormal. Seemed like it had a little bit of was there any bad blood there? Something that had to be settled on the basketball court?
Yeah, we were just talking trash, and there was this guy who's a pretty good athlete, but I don't think he played basketball all the time. And he's like, I can beat you in one-on-one. I'm like, you can't. And he couldn't.
Ooh.
Wait, what did you guys end up playing to? Because he has a little bit of an age advantage on you. He's a little bit younger.
No, I mean, this was like 2006. Eight at SI. I was not that old then. That really didn't matter.
If you played at 21, that's when you know it's real. That's a real.
He told me they played
21's not enough though. 21's not enough to really determine anything. Like you really got to go. Yeah, I feel like you got to go even further than 21.
What's the next level?
Yeah,
50.
Me and
I
my
never
friend,
hear of pickup games.
Me and my friend Fred played this war in college where we did play to 100 and we were both exhausted by the end. But we were so, it was like 194 and he was so mad that I won. But now I'm Now I'm not doing one-on-one, but I will do shooting contests. But even that, I don't know. With the knee injury, I haven't been in the lab lately.
I just can't. I know. Everyone's been wondering, when are you going to get back in the lab? I just can't believe this happened. I never even heard about it. I didn't come to SI till after this game took place. But actually,
it was not a big deal. We never talked about it with anybody. It wasn't like we were all talking about it in the newsroom.
Oh, so this was a secret sort of one-on-one.
No, it was just we just went out to shoot one day because we were friends. And we're like, let's play one-on-one. And it kept going and going. It wasn't like a thing. Like, like the Doug Gottlieb thing at DP show where I was talking to trash to Doug and we had a shooting contest, like stuff like that. I've had some real epic, epic shooting things in
Did
the past.
Did you meet Doug?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he could beat me.
And here we go.
I don't think he can do it. I want the smoke.
Wow.
What? From where?
Three-point line.
Which three-point line?
Whatever you want. I can do high school.
Thank God. College is like a mile away. NBA is like 2 miles away.
Coming up, the most desperate team in the draft. We've got them.